Welcome to the Stabcast, a podcast dedicated to Star Wars Legion.
In my experience, there's no such thing as luck.
Welcome, cadets and commanders, to the Stabcast, the Sun Sphere Tactical Attack Brigade Star Wars Legion podcast. I'm Tim the Tauntaun Hannon, with Ben the Bantha Fowler, and Ryan the Rancor Sawaski. How's everybody doing?
Doing fine, Tim. Doing fine.
Happy to be here. Got to play a bunch of Legion. Now we get to talk about it.
That's always a good thing. It's always a good thing.
This week on Stabcast, battle reports, more red player dilemmas, a glance at the new rules, and much, much more.
Let's start off with our battle reports, and I'll start us off with that. I played a game against Brandon on Wednesday, just this past Wednesday, at our casual night. And we actually had a really good casual night. We had six people come out, so that was really good. We had three different games of Legion going on, kind of dominated the middle tables. So that was good. For our game, we played Battle Lines, Recover the Supplies, and Mines. He had Veers, Boba, and E-Web, several storms of DLTs, Snow Squad with the traditional layout of the Flamers and Frags, and two Sniper Squads. I believe he was up to 11 activations. I could be off by one or two, but I believe he was at 11. I, on my side, had Veers and E-Web, a few DLT storms as well, also a Snow Squad with the Flamers and Frags, a Royal Guard unit, and an AT-ST. And the AT-ST just had a grenade launcher on it, which is how I'm kind of learning to like it. I know Ryan's talked about that before, and it's normally a pretty good way to do it. I really like that layout, but we'll get to that. This is my first time playing my AT-ST since, I think, September, and it did not go well. I made many mistakes. Many, many mistakes were had, and I was punished for them, rightfully so. I was blue player. He actually gave me blue player, took the initiative. And normally with mines, my strategy is I'm not actually afraid of them. I think mines are neat. I really like them, probably one of my favorite conditions. And so I like to just run out and trigger them right from the get-go and then not have to worry about it. And then we're good. The problem is that doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes they don't go off right away. Sometimes they go off twice. Now, for me personally, I've actually never had a mine go off twice until Wednesday. Wednesday, I had two mines both go off twice. And they hurt.
Yep,
oh, my gosh. Oh, it was awful. Oh, decimated. Absolutely just wrecked it. Couldn't do my saves to save my life. No pun intended. Just absolutely wrecked me. And yeah, normally that strategy worked fine. This time it really did not work fine. By the end of round one, I was already down two activations. And I already had, because I had AT-ST, I was already had fewer activations than Brandon did. And so I was really hurting for activations. And then really by the beginning of round two, I was already down another one. I had another squad die really quickly because of a mine that went off delayed and then took out a unit and a half.
No.
It was bad. It was bad. And then my snow squad got wiped out. Boba hopped up on top of a little power generator or whatever and then just flamed them to death with his command card. And just decimated, ironically, the flamethrower. They died real quick. So then all of a sudden, I went from having really strong flanks with some good units and the flamethrower back there to just a completely wide open flank. Nothing. So all I had was my middle. I had my stormtroopers up there. My Veers was also dead at the end of round one. He was one of those activations I lost. He got his special command card. We both did maximum firepower. His firepower was really strong. And just Veers just got roasted, and then he got finished off by the snipers. He just never had a chance. No cover because snipers. It was bad. It was so bad. And I know part of my problem was I focused on his E-Web. His E-Web was in heavy cover. He actually had several units in heavy cover, including his Veers, his E-Web, and a squad of stormtroopers with the DLTs, all in that really beautiful piece of cover that I just couldn't get through. Couldn't get enough damage through there. So his E-Web, I definitely focused too much on it, but I thought it was going to go down easier than it did. If I had known that, I wouldn't have bothered with it, but I just couldn't get it to go down, and it was in a perfect spot. I just got eaten alive, and I believe we called it at the end of round three. I believe it was the end of round three we called it, because there was just there was no way with the dwindling forces I had left that I could take him out. Part of my mistake too, in addition to focusing on the E-Web, was I also had my ATST run up the middle the last minute when I was going to deploy him on my flank, and I should have kept him on that flank. And I tried to run up the middle, tried to use him as a distraction of like, hey, look at me, shoot me instead. And Brandon, to his credit, didn't. Like, he just said no. And my ATST didn't even get a chance to really do much because, again, it was only a few rounds that we played through. And it just, yeah, just took me down real, real quick. Very, very humbling. And I definitely learned why I had not touched my ATST in so long. But, yeah.
So let me ask a question. Is it just the dice went bad? Is it from a setup turn zero issue? If you'd chosen different battle deployment cards, would that have made a difference for you? Like, battle lines, I think, was a problem.
Yeah, battle lines, I kind of just really ignored battle lines. I just went all on one side. It was a little bit of everything. I will say that, I hate to be the guy that says dice are bad. And I actually really tried hard not to. I tried to just take it in stride, keep the self-loathing to a minimum, which is always rough for me. But when your opponent says, and looks you in the eye and is sad for you, and your opponent says, I'm sorry, do you want to use my dice?
Oh,
then I know that I'm at least a little bit justified. Like, it was bad. And he will attest to that it was, it was, I just couldn't save anything, and everything came through super hot and heavy. It was bad.
Well, to mix my fandom, it looked a lot like that scene from Lord of the Rings where the good guys are trying to take back that city from all the orcs, and the orcs are behind all the barricades, and the good guys are on flat ground with no cover, and they just die.
Yes. Yes, it is very much, very much like that.
How much did that just hurt you, Ben, to refer to them as the good guys and that city, and not Gondor and Osgiliath?
It hurt me a lot. I was trying to not nerd out on it, but
I'm proud of you for trying.
So you brought the ATST out of retirement. I'm happy to see it making a comeback.
Yes,
our buddy Landon's been playing it a whole bunch. Battle lines is tough for ATSTs. Sure. I think that thing needs major offensive, honestly, disarray, something kind of fierce.
Yeah, and I will say, for all my hatred of disarray, as I've talked about before, I actually don't like. Or I'm sorry, I don't mind disarray as bad if I have my ATST because of that reason. Because you can just stick it in a corner and it's going to hold its own pretty well.
But talk to me here for a second, the thought, because I don't see an ATST pairing particularly well with a set of guards. It upsets your bag. I think they don't really, like, guards want to get in melee and lock stuff down, and the ATST wants to be able them to be free to shoot stuff. So what was your intention in bringing those two units together?
So the guards, actually, they were going to do pretty well. they were running up pretty well, and they were staying decently in cover. But then again, my flank fell apart, and so he had units shooting in from the flank. He had some shots that I didn't think he was going to be able to see me, but he did, with his E-Web and other things that I thought they were in cover. As far as bringing them together, I was trying to do something a little bit different. I know that the ATST is starting to come back up out of retirement, like you're saying, which I do like. And as much as I joke, I'll probably run it again before too long. Because right. I do think that with new cards coming out and all these new things coming out, we'll get to that little teaser. But with all the new things coming out, I think that there's lots of hope for it. There's lots of new things coming out for it, especially with new pilots and stuff coming out. I think it's going to definitely see a resurgence, which makes me happy because I've always loved it. I've just never been able to win with it. And I have a dream that one day I'll win a game with an ATST. I also have a dream that one day I'll win a game.
But I was about to say, like, does the ATST the factor there?
No, it's just a bigger factor. It's an easier factor to point to, but, like, look at that thing.
But speaking of really salty opponents, Ben, how is your game?
Oh, my game, my opponent, so salty by the end. I mean, just dripping in the salt, like salt was being thrown up. It was salt coming out of the nose. It was a stab cast on stab cast violence. Ryan and I played. He's going to Adepticon this year, and I'm not, which, you know, is the first time in 2 years I haven't been. The schedule just fell apart on us. So he needed some rebel practice. And I said, sure, because I'm a better player than Archimede the podcast when it comes to rebels. I'm kidding.
We're talking about Brett here.
We are.
I put together a list. I don't talk to Ryan about it. I put together a command hand, and then we start pulling things out on the table, and be darned if we're not playing pretty much a mirror list. There's some differences in it. It's Leia, Han, Chewie, troopers, fleets. I had two sets of snipers. Ryan had replaced the snipers and picked up a Wookiee squad. We're playing major offensive, rapid reinforcements, and intercept transmissions. I always like intercept transmissions. It's one of the missions I'll try to go towards. And with major offensive and the way our terrain was set up, Ryan actually made us flip sides of the table, and it didn't work out for him whatsoever. I'll roll a crit if I can roll one.
I don't know the table edge had anything to do with it, though.
I was an activation up. I think I was one activation up.
Mm-hmm. You were.
And it just kept me that one step ahead every time something needed to happen for your side. It didn't. And so I'd roll some attack dice and decimate something, and then my defense dice were decently good. And every time Ryan has cover in a game against me, I'll just throw a crit. I don't care about cover if it's a crit.
Nope. Yeah. It's a tale of two dice pools.
That's really what it boils down to.
Ryan and I were actually on the same side of the table while this was happening, and we just kept looking at each other and just being very remorseful about our dice. And
well, it was more than that.
Why are we bothering to try and throw these things? This is dumb.
We were getting mad at each other because I was trying to say that my dice were worse, and you were trying to say that your dice were worse, and neither one of us believed each other.
Because I had mines going off, man. You should have heard their screams. I can still hear them.
Me and Ben rolled identical dice pools. No, I had an extra die, and Ben managed to roll above me multiple times
pretty
in a
much
row.
Every time. Throwing
vaccine
pretty,
things.
Pretty
yeah.
much every time. Gross. I'd throw. I get gross. Four hits out of something, Ryan would get three. And I mean, it mounts up. And of course, it's intercept. So I went for the middle and I guess my right hand side. And Ryan looked like he was going to try to fight me on the right hand side, but then it kind of fell apart. And then I pushed hard against his left. There are a couple of really interesting plays that I almost did.
Yeah.
Had some nice tactical, like if this had been something, because Ryan and I are talking the entire game through. It was like, well, if we do this, if this were to happen, oh, after this round, what if this had played out over here? This is what Ryan and I do.
Yeah. Well, and it's a practice game. Like Ben was doing me a favor. Kudos to him for bringing Rebel versus Rebel, since I don't have a lot of local Rebel players to practice against.
Yeah, that's right.
We don't deal with that kind of scum around here.
And I honestly, we talked about the turn zero. I told Ryan, I was like, I've got two options here. And one is almost the red player dilemma thing with me, where I choose something that doesn't work as well for him, but could work better for me. And I had the chance of going breakthrough in battle lines. I don't like breakthrough. I mean, it's a game and it's fine. I don't mind playing the thing. But he and I debated it. And we think that my list would have been better at it. And Parks had more activations.
You have more activations. I think if we were to play breakthrough, it would have come down to the Wookiees.
Yeah, I think so. And I think
can my Wookiees clean up two activations before they went down? Was what they pretty much had to do.
Ryan and I, we both didn't want to show each other our command hands to the very end. We had the exact same command hand.
We both did a couple goofy things. Because when you play that list, like you actually have some legitimate options, especially with the specialist pack. We were both trying to mind game each other that we have change of plans when neither one of us brought change of plans. We ran somebody has to save our skins, and then the new generic 3-pip covering fire. So yeah, it was fun.
It was, yeah. And then I played Somebody's Gotta Save Our Skins, but I played it in a weird place in part because I was trying to mind game some things. I played on like turn two.
Well, you played it, I think, in the right place, but I think when we talked about this during the game, you didn't use it correctly. There was a really sweet spot on the map for me to rapid reinforce, and I had left one of my squads back, kind of not making a great spot for Ben to rapid reinforce. He sets his guys up with Somebody Has to Save Our Skin, his three face-up order tokens, trying to point it in that direction. And so I thought he was going to wait for me to drop there, put my guys down, and then jump on them with two back-to-back activations and just wipe my fleets or wipe my Wookiees. But they were his first and second activation because he was trying to go after that momentum edge. And he got some good stuff out of it, but then I was able to safely drop in behind him. And honestly, of the three points, that was the one I nearly won.
Yeah, it really was. If we kept the game going a little bit longer, it would have been. I probably lose that in the final round.
Yes, I think you would have. Because it's snipers against fleets.
And it's rapid reinforcements. So, like, I was trying to keep my guys from having to drop early so that you couldn't shoot them. So I was spending tokens I had on the board trying to not to accidentally activate my own. So,
but doesn't somebody has to save our skins kind of go against that ethos because you're playing two activations back-to-back anyway?
Which is why so I never actually use the card. I didn't actually use
That's true. That's true. you just use it for the order.
So, I assume, Ryan, you don't want to talk about that game anymore. So...
No, it was a tough loss. I conceded, I think, at turn three when my Leia went down like a sack of potatoes.
Yay for conceding at turn three.
Because turn four, I was likely going to contest the 1 point he had. And so I was going to pick up two more in turn four. So it'd be four to one, I think.
Does that mean two of three members of the Savcast have conceded at turn three this week?
In the same week, yeah.
Oh, that's
The other thing to consider is we were playing a practice game, and at that point, there was nothing more that I could learn from that game. It was just Ben shooting me. I mathematically didn't have enough dice, even if I roll all hits and he rolls all blanks, to push him off of very many points, or at least enough to swing the game back.
And we weren't time-wise going to make it to probably round six, so we were going to end it by the end of round four, probably for time purposes.
And so we shook on it. And so that's something that you can always do when you're playing. If you're set up with your opponent beforehand to like, hey, I've got a tournament coming up. Let's play a practice game. The purpose of that scrimmage was for Ben to help me out. So when I've had enough, we kind of call it. And sadly, we had ran a little long to maybe set up and go again. But, you know, you only play until you can learn something. And then once you've run out of learning, it's okay to kind of throw in that towel.
And see, it's a very different thing in a tournament, because I'm a big believer in play out everything in a tournament. Make your opponent
go high. Absolutely.
But yeah, in a friendly game, we could have just stopped at dinner. So.
Yeah. If you have to play Ben in a tournament and you win, Ben will make you play all six turns and he will absolutely wear you down for your next opponent.
As you should.
It's my promise to my next guy.
But speaking of tournament play, I actually got to go to a tournament this week. I wandered my way down to Epico's in Chattanooga with Landon, who's a good friend of the show. He was bringing a double AT-ST list. And so we were expecting, usually when we go to like Cleveland or Chattanooga, there's usually four or five guys at these little events. And when we have our local events, we can maybe get up to six. But tournaments are usually like two rounds and we're done. And then we go have a nice dinner and it's all good. 10 people came out of the woodwork for this event. We had a couple guys up from Atlanta. A guy came from Nashville. There were a couple Knoxville guys and then a couple chat fellows. And so it turned into this 10-man, three-round like brawl. It was a pretty good saturation. I want to say it was six Imperials, four Rebels. Maybe it was 7-3. But there was pretty good representation and lots of list variety, with one exception. There were 10 players and five AT-STs.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure there were too many AT-STs.
Oh, wow. That makes my heart happy.
Granted, Landon had two of them. But everyone, I think, was in the same headspace that Tim was, where we're like, I haven't played my AT-ST in a while. Let me break him out.
It is the time. Spring is coming. The spring of walkers.
So my round two game was a really freaking cool game. Round one, I played the TO of our Cleveland games, Josh Adams, and we had a good time. He hasn't gotten to play a bunch because he'll usually take the bye when he's hosting an event, which is kudos to him. So we had a pretty good game. But round two, I got to play Josh Hoffman from Nashville. So I beat a local guy, I beat a chat player. Now it was time to move on to Nashville. And we ended up playing Hostile Environment, Intercept Transmissions, and Battle Lines. A setup that I actually really quite like, with the exception of Battle Lines. I took a weird list. I took a list that I kind of wanted to experiment with, and I kind of wanted to fiddle around with. It was all the damage in the world and none of the control. I took Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, and Chewbacca. That's a lot of points in single units.
That's expensive.
But it does a lot of damage and has like zero utility, with the exception of force push. But I rounded it out with four Rebel Troopers, one of which had the frag and Z6. Two of them had recon intel, and then one of them was just like a dinky little four-man squad. And then my typical fleet troopers with concussion grenades, shotguns, and environmental gear. And then I rounded my points out with a lone sniper team. Josh was playing a General Veers list with one set of bikes, four DLT storms, a flame and frag snow, a sniper, and an ATST. I have not played against an ATST probably in a tournament setting since Gen Con, so I was a little shaky. I had some good answers for impact. I had Luke, I had Chewbacca, I had the frag and Z6. Fleets aren't terrible at them. You throw enough dice, something's going to come up crit. But I was still a little worried. We played on this cool urban map with some pipelines running through the middle of it. And with intercept transmissions, we dropped our deployment zones or our objective tokens down. And the neoprene mat that the game was pitted on had a road running through the middle of it that we didn't have much on other than some like scatter terrain. And so these objective points were kind of out in the middle of no man's land, but there was cover just in range of range one on either side of the street that we could kind of hide behind on our sides of the street. So we kind of had like an old school shootout. But on one end of the map, there was this big piece of blocking terrain where I kind of hid my snipers and he hid his, so our snipers couldn't see each other, which usually you end up having these sniper battles. We didn't. So on one of his flanks, he had just his speeder bikes and his sniper team. He had two sets of stormtroopers contesting the middle, and then two storms, a snow, Veers, and the ATST contesting one side. I answered up by only putting two rebel troopers and Luke in the middle, my snipers pretty much, and a set of troopers on one end. Then on the far right side where he was stacked, I had fleets, frags, and Z6, and Han. And man, it turned into an absolute shootout. I got all of the work out of Chewie's Guardian. He was always where he needed to be to absorb a couple of key hits. It came down to on the last scoring point where Chewbacca was standing in between two objective points, not scoring one himself, but I had a single unit leader holding each point that he couldn't kill because Chewbacca kept taking all the hits and he couldn't roll crits.
Ugh. That's why you kill Baca first. That's why you shoot him first.
Luke had managed to push some people off of a point, and then they got suppressed and started panicking away. And as Luke was kind of running to the main engagement on the far right side, they've made a rally roll, and Luke like had to kind of run back and finish the job. And so Luke kind of just held the middle point by himself, but didn't contribute a whole lot to the main fight. And then the brawl with Han, the ATST, the fleets, and my frags and Z6, and it was just a knockdown, drag-out fight. He had this little box where he could get in heavy cover, and Han's terrible at shooting into heavy cover. My fleets did pretty good, but behind there was an ATST, and then a box, and then three sets of troopers and Veers. And so I had to deal with that ATST, and I barely managed to bring it down. It was actually kind of comical because I run in there with my Z6 and frags and get a little bit of damage done. Then my fleets shoot it and get a little bit of damage done. And then I frag it again, and it takes a little bit of damage. And then Han shoots it, aims into a crit for the last point of damage, and then we just imagine that like Han just then like blows the smoke coming out of his barrel as the ATST hits the ground.
So sad.
Yeah, it was a pretty intense game. And when me and Josh were kind of digesting how everything went afterwards, the lesson that we kind of took away from it is a lot of the cool tricks that swung the game my way. The score, I think, was 7-3, but all of those points were really closely contested, so it was a much closer game than the score reflects. And all of the cool tricks that I did were Guardian, Esteemed Leader, and Force Push. They were all things that don't require die rolls to happen. Mm-hmm. When you take an ATST, when you take bikes, when you take Veers as one pip, and when you take Flamers, you're putting all your eggs in this variance basket. And so I think it's a testament to trying to push edges and push advantages that don't require die rolls to really get you that edge. Because honestly, that game swung on force push. If Luke can get into a place to push one of his stormtroopers out of cover off an objective to where my lone rebel troopers can take some shots on it and suppress them so they panic again,
Right.
That's really what helped swing that the second scoring round my way. And it was a really fun, interesting game. Like, the score was kind of disparaging, but Josh played a really good game, and it was really tight going into that final scoring round.
See, that's part of what was happening in your game and my game, Ryan, was that Chewbacca couldn't take any hits because I was throwing crits at things. And then you were throwing crits back at me. So our Chewies weren't guarding anything.
Right.
Well, and let me ask you, what was on his AT-ST?
It wasn't a full Weiss AT-ST. It was the mortar and the grenade launcher. Okay. But the way the buildings were set up and the way that he deployed it, he never got to use the mortar.
Right.
That's rough.
That's why I'm seeing more of that drift away from the mortar and just keeping it simple to the grenade launcher, man.
What he was trying to do is there was this set of buildings and he wanted to pull in and swing down and be able to look down the whole street, but he didn't get there because it kind of got jammed up. And then he finally went down. Like, I got the AT-ST relatively early. I want to say I killed it halfway through turn three. So, but he put it in this tight little choke where it was, everybody was piled up around it. But when we were deploying units, I thought the way he was playing, he was going to put it on the other side and I was going to have to send Luke and Chewbacca after it instead of Han Solo. But he just kind of, he stacked it. I see a lot of Imperials play this way, and I don't know that it's right or wrong. I'm not an Imperial player, but he puts, you know, instead of just a third, a half of his army around Veers and kind of leaves the rest of the flanks SOL, hoping that Veers' action economy will swing the momentum of the game.
Right. Well, and that's, I think I do that a lot as an Imperial player, like when you say it, and I'm starting to kind of realize it, and so now I'm kind of curious about some of these newer things and if that might change some of that, maybe fix some of that. It's also why not to keep saying the same thing over and over again as I have before, but it's why I'm excited for Krennic to run Krennic and Veers together.
Yeah, and I think it makes it a whole lot easier to spread out when I am running double commander plus an operative. Like, I can spread out and I don't have to worry about my leadership bubble too much.
Right.
Well, if you want to see pictures that Ryan took of that dramatic battle, you can find them on our Instagram. We've got photos of our most recent events. I'm about to post a photo of our Wednesday casual play where you can't see Tim because he's crying behind the camera, but you can see a salty Ryan and a very calm, cool, collected Ben.
Very true.
That's pretty salty.
This is very true. You can't see the camera shaking, but it was because of the crying.
Take a look at our Instagram. We post as many photos as we possibly can. We love to post them out there.
That's right. And while you're looking at that Instagram, you can look at our Facebook, our Twitter. You can rate us on iTunes, all that stuff. We are SW Stabcast.
Yep. If you want to support the show directly, you can go to our Teespring shirt shop at teespring.com/store/Stabcast and pick up a t-shirt, help us pay our housing costs for our servers and all that stuff. You can also, we would love if you sent us a line at swstabcast@gmail.com. The thing I really want you to send there is, questions, concerns, feedback, anything you want. But I want to see where you play. Send us information and hopefully some photos about what store you play at, when you play there, if you have any upcoming events. And we'll put your pictures on our Instagram, on our Twitter, and shout out your store in case somebody listening maybe lives near you and doesn't quite know about it. So share your store with us. And now we've got some cool news from the HoloNet. With the Stabcast always being the most up-to-date and on-time and never late bleeding edge podcast that we are.
That's right. On the routine schedule.
We're going to review the Imperial Specialists that came out last week.
That's
right. In our defense, we recorded the last episode right before they came out, and I think like six hours later, it popped up on the internet. So
yes, it did.
Yeah. This is true. So speaking of these new Imperial Specialists and things like that, the cars and the points, everything's pretty much on the Imperial side again, 1 point higher than the Rebel counter. So let's just talk about the command cards first.
Hold on. I want to talk about how much of a bargain that is. You're upgrading with everything but the commander from a white to a red defense die for 1 point. That's value town, folks. That's a value town.
Now,
go ahead.
Now, folks, I don't control the soundboard on here, but this is where I put in like some tiny violins or something. But again, I don't have that kind of power. They don't trust me that much yet.
How do I know it's a tiny violin? They're too smart for
that. Well, because he doesn't deserve a big one. That's So everything's 1 point higher. These command cards, the internet, I know. Let's start with the big one that everybody's talking about. Oh my goodness. It's coordinated fire. Insert screams and panics and pandemonium. Spend an aim token. Another unit at 1 to 2 gets another aim. It's great, but it's not broken. If you use it right, it can definitely be really strong. I'm glad it's a command card, not some kind of ability.
Right.
Because I'm really grateful that this has to be done at the right time. And I think that's kind of what sells it for me. Because if it was an ability, I think it would be too strong. But as a command card, it's fine. Again, I don't think it's everything's coming down and this changes the whole game. Oh, no. Like, it's fine. It can definitely swing around. But that's one round if six. So if you let that one round determine everything, that's probably more on you than the command card. And I'll say it, even though I'm an Imperial player, I don't think it's as good as the Rebel one. Because in addition to everything else I just said, the aim is a reroll. If I use it on a stormtrooper, and I know we're using it on different units and things like that, but let's just say we're using it on a stormtrooper, I'm rerolling those white dice. And remember, that's not like you're just taking out a blank result. You are just taking your die and resetting it. You're rerolling it. And so you're still leaving a lot of chance in there. Meanwhile, on the Rebel side, you get a dodge token. A dodge is an automatic save short of a crit, which does happen, yes, but there's a lot less chance. So the hot take is that I like it, I love it, I don't need it. Everybody please calm down.
I think you bring up an interesting point, Tim, about the reroll versus the dodge token. And it's the fact that aim tokens will offer diminishing returns. Like the first aim token you spend mathematically is the best aim token. And anything that comes after that is less good, because theoretically your dice are getting a little more, hopefully better with each roll. And they're diminishing returns, and it requires you to kind of shoot left to right, which your opponent hopefully isn't going to let you do.
Yeah.
What do you think, Ben? Opponent tonight, if you go to our Twitch stream, you can see the game that Ryan played. He had a lot of aim tokens because Veers was giving him out and he was taking aim tokens and he got some very nice hits out of it. But it was definitely, he's having to roll into it, and sometimes the rolls didn't help him. So I like it for a Veers list, but I don't think it works on a Palpatine list. And I don't know that I think it works all that well on a Vader list. I see it, but I don't see the love for it. I don't see the internet hype. I'm confused. Is it ironic, like hipster hype? Like, we know it's bad, so we love it. Or I love it so much, I want to scream.
It's better than Assault, I think, at the end of the day. And since right now Imperial Commanders are coming by themselves, with it being better than Assault, it's going to go in your list and it's a general upgrade. I don't think that Covering Fire is an auto-include all the time. I think it's a strong card, but depending on your composition, it can change. I think this card is pretty much an auto-include for a lot of Imperial players right now.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely auto-include.
But yeah, Tim hit it on the head. It's not as cool as Covering Fire. I think both cards are a little crazy strong. The fact that they don't require the unit to pass the token to have a face-up order token. So the fact that just any core and you can pull any token and pass that along is really cool. But like Tim said, variance over assured things. I think Covering Fire, especially with that nimble keyword, is a whole lot stronger.
What I think I love about it is the ability to give Boba Fett the aim token. So I don't have to put Hunter on him. And then I don't have to waste actions trying to get the aim token. Or Vader, yes.
Yeah, I think their ability to pass them to friends that aren't core is the real jazz here.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where it shines. And I think that's maybe kind of been in regards to what you were saying. I think that's where maybe it would shine in like a Vader or a Palp list or whatever. But it really, I think it depends on what you're running. If you're running a single commander list and you only have to worry about one set of command cards, then automatically, like Ryan was saying, swap out that assault for that automatically. Boom, done. But if you got to swap out other things, then I'm going to be giving it some real thought.
Yeah, and plus with the inclusion of the comm specialist and comm relay, you don't get punished so bad if you include those, because if you're running a single commander list, you always want to be able to order your commander, and that still gives you an out to do it for just a handful of points.
Right, definitely.
But I think the secret sauce of this pack, man, of the three command cards, the one that I don't think people have quite unlocked the potential to, is Pinned Down. Is such a cool card. I'm a little jealous.
So good.
Like, we get to do the cool rebel things in R2 pip with our supports that we don't really take right now. Like, no one's clambering to take their ATRTs or their F1 turrets. They're fine. They're good. But, like, it's pretty common that Imperialists are going to have a support, one or two supports or heavies in them. Like, it's pretty commonplace. And this card is awesome.
Yeah,
the ability to put tokens back in somebody's bag, potentially turning off abilities or at least delaying them, shooting Son of Skywalker before, you know, if Luke didn't have to activate first, if Luke was waiting for somebody to move into range, or maximum firepower. But I think the thing you hunt for is this 100% absolute dumpsters reckless diversion.
Praise. Yes, it does. Praise. Thank you.
Oh, look, I don't have to shoot at Han if his token's not out on the table.
Yeah.
That's right.
Like, Pinned Down is such a cool card. It's such a cool design space. It gives so much counterplay. And we'll talk about one of the neat ways here in a little bit that you can kind of abuse it. But yeah, there is so many cool ways to counterplay this card. The other card that absolutely dumpsters is Somebody Has to Save Our Skins. If she can't back-to-back activate people, if there's nobody with face-up tokens. The same way with new ways to motivate them.
Oh, and that's why I absolutely love the card, because I do love an ATST, and we've been talking about bringing it back to the table. I think that new pilot has given us all a new jazz for it. But I love its base weapon and two more. I love the mortar, and I love the grenade launcher. So when you can launch all those things, you can take away three tokens off the table. Or a Veer's triple bike. Like I said, you can have one bike shoot at them and another guy shoot his hand blaster off to the side, and you're stripping command tokens off the table. Han, Chewie, get out of here. Go back to that bag. See if you can't get through all your core first. Then we'll talk about those two.
That's right. And
bikes can close to range. I mean, they move so quick and so fast. They can get anywhere they want to on the table just to shoot to knock off command tokens.
Yeah. Take that, Han. It's like, that's as soon as I read that, it was, take that on. You don't tell me what to do. I'm going to shoot who I want to shoot. I'm going to do my tactics how I want to do. You get back in your bag, and Chewie, you get back in your cage. That's it. I love it. I can't wait to see it used well. Kind of like Ryan said, I do think it's going to take some getting used to. So as much as I say I love it, I'm probably going to misuse it the first few times. I'm probably not going to be perfectly honest. I'm probably not going to be super great at it. Which is utterly shocking coming from me, that I'm not going to be great at this game.
Here's the trick to play it well if you're playing against a Han list, which it sounds like you really want to. The turn where you think it's going to be really frustrating if the only thing you can shoot is Han, wait and play it then, and you'll be fine.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Or don't play it then and have it when they play Change of Plans.
Right, right.
Because they can still make it go away.
Yes, this is true. This is true. But then at that point, it's not coming out at the same time as Reckless Diversion, hopefully. So maybe, maybe not. We'll see. But that depends. So I think it opens up a lot of possibilities that are just really, really exciting. Speaking of exciting, what about that other one, Ben?
So listen, Internet, you're wrong about Covert Observation. That's right. I'm just going to take a stand right here. It's not the greatest one pip card in the world. All right. It's not, you know, given, it's not Now You Will Die. But with more and more command cards, with more operatives, with more commander options for it, it's going to be good. And I like the fact that you can give an order to a scout sniper if you need to, or an order to Boba Fett without using one of Boba Fett's cards. Because sometimes you do need him to move quick and move fast, and you don't want to use his flamethrower card because you're not quite in range one yet, or you're not really sure you want to use his whipcord card at this moment. So giving him an ability to go ahead and move first, I like it.
Yeah. You'll notice that when I told Ben to talk about it, I just said the other one. That wasn't a typo. That wasn't a mistake or a misspeaking on my part. It's neat. It's fine. I think it's great when you have new cards coming in and all these new things coming around. I'll use it if I have the space for it. I'll probably swap things around for it, but I'm not drooling at it. I think it's fine. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm probably wrong, but I think it's fine.
The problem with the card, and I don't think it's a terrible, terrible card, but for me, it's the command card that's on top of the trash pile. It's not mm-hmm. buried down in it. It is gingerly placed on top of the trash. Mm-hmm. With more and more two commander plus an operative list, and then especially once we get to two commander, two operatives, especially if somebody breaks the game and figures out how to make double generic commander or something like that work with operatives to spice it up, I think this card could come in into play. But right now, it just can't compete with the other one pips. Yeah. For me, the place I want to see this card is on a comm upgrade, where it's like you tap and you can look at a card or two from your opponent's hand, and then you have to refresh it. That would be, I think, a better place for this ability rather than a command card, and a one pip command card, no less.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah, I think with the one pip, you should be able to see more than probably those two, unless it's one of those you hold it till turn three just to figure out what's going to happen the last two rounds.
But here's the thing. Every time you play that card, you're going to pull standing orders and something else. So if you're playing that Han list, you're going to pull standing orders and Reckless Diversion, because Han doesn't go home without that card. Like, those are two cards you already know are there. So yeah, we'll have to see. Right now, I don't think it has much of a place, but it's a neat design space, and I would love to see abilities like it, but maybe come from different places other than the command hand.
I can see that. That's fair. Well, speaking of our command hands, they only work when you're taking a look at the battle plan. So let's work our way through the red player's dilemma this week. You took 800 points and are playing the denial game. Deny the blue player any advantage. And so sometimes you get a battlefield that looks like this. Advanced positions, breakthrough, and minefield. Gentlemen, how do you plan for that game?
Ugh.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why we're talking about it. I think that, especially with advanced positions, you're really going to be looking at those mines to do a lot of your dirty work early on. Just even talking about mines is giving me a little bit of a flashback right now, because it's a little bit too recent. Like I said,
I didn't mean to trigger you, Tim. Going, my apologies.
It's fine. I'll cry about it later. That's what my pillow's for, just crying nice and soft into it. However, I think they can be used really well. I think they are really fun still. And if you're the red player, especially, you're going to be wanting to use those and position them to where, okay, you're going to be advancing. I want you to advance right onto a mine. And on the flip side, when you're deploying, because obviously your opponent can do similar things to you, I think you have to be really careful about, where am I going to go? Where am I going to deploy? Because advanced positions is very unique in how it is set up, I think really trying to keep your opponent on their toes and don't let them corner you with the mines. So really trying to play the mind game, not a mind game, the mind game. Yes, it's a pun, deal with it.
But never, ever a mime game.
No mind games.
Oh goodness. Well, when you're done dealing with that, you can deal with the mines and just figure out, okay, which area am I going to push? And really, I like the advanced position so that you can have a little bit of freedom and keep people guessing of where am I going to end up. Use that scout to your advantage.
See, for me, advanced positions and breakthrough, I've actually played this once on the table against Arch and me, the podcast. I think you have to push across the middle. You're too far away in the opposite corners. Like, it just takes too many activations to get to that one sliver. And so I try to put all the units in the middle. And to stop my opponent, I think I have to put the mines in places where they're going to want to try to cross. And so I'm looking for chokeholds in the map. Is there some kind of terrain that's going to block them out? Is there some kind of natural corridor they're going to try to want to walk through? And sometimes that means I've got to walk through my own mines, things that I place there. But it's definitely, I put everything in the center. And I want to have that fight in the center, because often when I see an opponent who will line up along the L on all corners of it, I think to myself, I've got it. Because their troops are so far away from getting to my zone, they have to cross three full feet. And just to get to the edge of that. And you have to get your unit leaders in there. And if you get them all bunched up, you actually can't get there fast enough. Breakthrough is a game where you have to count actions. Because if you don't parcel it out enough, if you get taken down with some kind of suppression, you don't make it in the zone.
Yep.
So I think it's a tightening game. It's a game that you have to play. You have to really count and look. And it's not an easy game to win. I think you can get to the middle and lose. The dice turn against you. You're in the wrong spot. The minefield explodes 2, 3, 4 times. It's a thing that goes badly. But
17 if you're Tim. Man, I hate advanced positions. It takes too long. It's not exciting. It makes objective play not really matter because you're so close to everything. I hate breakthrough because it comes to turn 4 and then I'm like, are we going to shoot at each other or are we going to run? Oh, we're both going to run. All right, we'll see who wins. It's so, both of those are just so boring. It takes long to set up. And the way that breakthrough and advanced positions interact with one another, and I'll get to minefield here in a minute, but the way they interact with each other, if you kind of just set up 2 skirmishes, if you're me anyway, on the 2 parts of the L, the 2 very ends, because they're the closest points to your opponent's deployment zone. And so you're trying to watch where your opponent's deploying, and I've been pretty much running double commander exclusively for a very long time, as I think many Rebel players are. And so I'll just plop down my one commander in each zone, surround them with troops, and you have these 2 skirmishes. And then you'll probably win one and lose the other, and then you just hope that you win the one harder than your opponent does, and then you run towards the center. But because you know where these 2 skirmishes are going to happen, you just mine those appropriately, and they blow up, and you see what happens, and it's like, there's not a whole lot of pizzazz or creativity to it. This is probably the most fighty, violent game of breakthrough that you can play, because there's very small geometric space where you and your opponent are both trying to take the shortest route possible to your opponents, to deployment zones. So then you can turn around and try to shoot them in the back as they run away.
I think you just described World War I.
Yeah, I think this game is pretty much determined at the end of turn 4.
Yes, I agree.
I don't see how much after turn 4 is really going to matter. Like, after you've pushed through each other, we'll see what's left, count some unit leaders. And unless there's some real trickery with, like, snipers or e-webs or, heaven forbid, Rebel pizza guns, I don't think much will change. So prepare for the violence. Play this like a death match, blow some stuff up with mines, and advanced positions and mines is always a dangerous proposition. So your mileage may vary, but I think this is not a setup that I would look forward to playing with my play style. But it's one you very well may find yourself in. And so the ways that I think you can really get around that is trying to make sure you have your efficient units all stacked in one corner that can tear apart opponents' whole activations to get efficiently unit leaders off the board. And then, you know, if you've got 10 activations, sticking 3 in one corner with a commander and then your other 6 in another, where you try to push through and then just make them suffer on one side.
Yeah.
But now that I've got all my negativity out there on how much I would hate that setup, we've got some new rules to go over. We've gotten some new card clarifications, some new interaction clarifications. The last time we did this was back in November, I want to say, so there's been quite a few additions. We haven't talked about the ones that posted early in January, so we're going to talk about those today, and then there were also some that just came out more recently with the specialist packs. So new rules updates. The first one that I think is actually rather important to go over is there was a lot of confusion with clear pegs and bases and cover. When do you count the base? When don't you count the base? And FFG has come through and cleaned it up that you only count the base if it's a trooper unit. If it's on a clear peg and it's on a notched base, you ignore it. If it's on a clear peg, but it's on a round base, you always count the base for cover. So it's a nice little clarification of when repulsors work and don't work.
So you're telling me that I can mod my Boba Fett now without breaking the rules?
No, but Tim is.
Yes, you can. You can, as long as the overall height of the miniature is not significantly altered, and it's considered a reasonable alteration as far as tournament rules go. But you shouldn't, because that's dumb, and you're going to mess something up, and then someone's going to get mad, and then there's going to be a fight, and you're going to take this fun game with little plastic men to a whole level it doesn't need to be. Just leave it alone. Alter everything else in the world. Just leave him on his peg. It's just not needed.
So we have this very nice correction, I think, on the issuing orders, and it came straight out of the specialist pack. But during the command phase, a unit can be issued an order only once, even if a game effect caused that order to be removed or to be issued to another unit instead. So I can't order my comms relay man and then also order my comms relay man again. It makes sense.
Right. I was really looking forward to, before they put this out, of playing covering fire and then having both of my commanders and my operative range two of the comms relay unit. Just have him take the token three times and then my bag is controlled. Dang you, FFG.
No, sir.
You
just have to have three comms units now. You have to have three separate comms.
Yeah, that's not happening. So the confusing one that is actually they put a correction and interpretation up for, but then recently just changed it as the one I guess I'm the expert to talk about. And it's how the heck do we do reckless diversion? What counts as an attack? What doesn't? In the old rules, when you formed your attack pool, as long as one weapon type was going to a unit with a face-up order token, then it checked the box, it fulfilled the requirement, and you could split fire. And that was one way to kind of game around the system, is you shoot your DLTs, your white dice at Han, or whoever's got the face-up token, and then the DLT goes somewhere else. But they've changed it from that how their original answer worked, and they've cleaned it up nicely to where if you can shoot it, you have to. Anything that can shoot that trooper with a face-up token has to do so. The only workaround is if you want to split fire and there's two trooper units with face-up tokens, then you're still within the rules. I liked the counterplay options of the previous interpretation of it a little bit better. You could get a little cheeky, and it made for some unique strategies and some unique ways to play the game. But this keeps it simple, if at least less interesting. So I kind of like it. I kind of don't. I'm on the fence about how I feel about it.
Yeah, I like it, but it makes sense, and that's why I like it. It keeps it simple. You're not stuck trying to figure out, okay, I'm going to shoot this weapon, this guy, and this weapon, this guy. Like, it just you're shooting at one dude, and that's how it goes.
See, I was not a fan of the old ruling. I really wasn't. It played outside the thematics of the card. A diversion is a diversion. So, yay for the new ruling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In our last tournament, I mean, since I tend to be the organizer of the tournaments, Ryan is my marshal, so he keeps me on the straight and narrow. And I tried to argue against that particular ruling, and Ryan's like, no, it's this thing. And I was like, I use some adult language at Ryan. No, I didn't do that.
Yep.
Yeah, you did.
Actually, in Ryan and I's last game, the game that Ryan and I last played, I think it was a couple weeks ago, that actually came up of the how does reckless diversion work, and it was who can my speeder bike shoot and all these things, and we came to a very fine agreement on it, and it was fine, but it took us a good 5 or 10 minutes of discussion to get there, and that's the problem.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I'm a big believer in the keep it simple.
Yeah,
keep it simple. Yeah. So speaking of keeping it simple, Han Solo and command cards, of course, two Rebel players would have this issue. Tim, does your side have this issue? No, they don't. The Imperials don't have the issue of what happens when I change of plans, my opponent's change of plans. So if one player, player A, plays change of plans, and then I change my plans into change of plans, can I choose the card I chose the first time? And the answer is, of course you can. It's a different card from that time. I know that explanation sounded confusing, but it all works out perfectly right. So if you change your plans, my reckless diversion, and then I, as the Han Solo player, the second Han Solo player, I play change of plans instead, I can then go back to my Reckless Diversion because Change of Plans is now the second card.
Correct. Or hear me out. You just play Imperials and you don't worry about this nonsense because you play like a gentleman.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now,
the thing they didn't address, which they kind of probably maybe should have, is what happens when you and your opponent both play Change of Plans at the exact same time. I know, right? Blue players card goes first.
Yeah.
I'm 90% sure that's accurate. I'm not 100%, but I'm 90% sure it's change of the blue player's change of plan goes first. No, that's actually it. Yeah, you probably, I don't know. FFG, I mean, because Alex Davies.
Because when you tie on pips, you'd have the roll off to see and is what whoever's got the turn.
Yeah, I like the idea of a roll off.
Turn two, so red player rolls the die, but then they get to choose first.
When you play the same value card again, do you have another roll off or does the first roll off stand?
No, I imagine you have to have a second roll off.
Again, this is a gentleman's game or a ladies' game. No, you know, no bias. And this is a polite game, and you can choose to have that roll off if you show desire. That's fine.
No, we're tournament tryhards, man. It's got to be written in the book.
Exactly.
I was close.
Well, Tim, so right. Now don't get me wrong. There is some confusing command cards on the Imperial side.
Yes.
Yes. Much like give in to your anger. And I've actually had this one roll a few times of when you give in to your anger against a unit that would otherwise have something that's going to happen at the end of their activation. So like an orbital bombardment or maximum firepower kind of situation. When does that trigger? Does it trigger? Do they run and then trigger it? How does that work? And the answer, and again, I think it's another answer that makes sense. I'm pretty happy with it as an Imperial player. I would have kind of liked to have the people have to run away and then try and use it, but that's not really fair. I get it. So the answer is you resolve the end of the activation effect and then you would run away in fear. If that controlling player so chooses, you do have a choice. Most people would probably choose to do it last.
I want to know who asked this question. Because who is like, I play my Palpatine 2 pip, they play Orbital Bombardment, and he's like, I pick Leia to go first.
That was exactly my thought. Why would you choose Leia?
It's usually like Fleet Trooper over there, you're going to go first.
Yes. Yeah. That's really, yeah. Someone who can't possibly get a shot off. And again, the thematics, they're getting a shot off. They've called it an Orbital Bombardment. Yeah. They've called it a Firepower.
Right.
Again, it seems like a problem only to a rules lawyer.
Yes.
Yeah. When I say, I should clarify, when I say that this question has come up before, it came up before because we were asking what would have happened if we had done that. But then we chuckled and laughed and said, but no, I would never do that. And then, I did what I would normally do. And that's it. That's where it came up was, what a silly thing to do. Moving on.
Well, speaking of that, so sabotage communications, does it cause my opponent to only be able to issue a total number of orders equal to one fewer listed on the command card? In other words, can my opponent use HQ uplink and entourage to issue additional orders? And again, this is a rule I thought it didn't seem like it took a whole lot of analysis. That seems kind of plain.
It's pretty clear. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. You're shrinking the order on the command card, and then anything else that happens, like HQ uplink or entourage, they still happen.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It was, I guess,
nice clarification. Make the ruling. They put it out there.
Right.
But everybody pretty much played it right.
I think so, too.
Another one that came up is when playing a command card like pinned down, if the attacking heavy or support unit has more than one mini or the also arsenal keyword and attacks more than one unit, does each defender, if they have a face-up token, are they all returned to the pools or is it only one or how does that work? And the answer makes my heart happy and it makes my brain happy. Each defender's face-up token is returned. So while the attack is only considered performing one attack for other effects, the text does actually read that a unit with a face-up token.
After it defends, right?
Right, after it defends. So therefore, it's pretty great for us bike people and Imperial players. It's great for all those things. But I also, on the more balanced viewpoint, I like what it sets up for the future. I think it's a cool thing, cool distinction to make for maybe future cards that'll help us. Hopefully that'll help us with future rulings before there's a direct answer to future questions we might have.
Yeah. And kind of on the other side of the page where the Imperial card gets buffed by its clarification, when playing covering fire, if you split your attack and have multiple targets, you're still only ever performing one attack. So even if I have a grenade go one place and a Z6 go another, I still only give out one dodge token because it's only one attack. I'm pretty sure everybody has played this correctly. The only people who want it to work another way are power gamers, and you guys need to calm it down. We don't need to split, load all of our rebel troopers down with heavy weapons and grenades just so we can shoot three and use cohesion so we, even our guys with just black dice, can't all see the same people. So I have to shoot at five different people to give out five dodge tokens. It doesn't work that way. Stop it. You get one attack per round. So it's only one dodge token that you get to hand out.
Yeah, when I first got into this style of gaming, because I'd never done anything before, there was the other game that's been around for many, many years, and the talk was always of rules as written or rules as intended. And, you know, you just get in these fights with rules lawyers, and rule lawyers just, I mean, they just ruin all the fun time. Let's just be honest with it. As an English major who became a school teacher, because all my other English major friends became lawyers, I hate to quote Shakespeare at them, but I'm going to. The first thing we do is that we kill all the lawyers.
That's right.
So with all this talk of the new, let's take a look at the units that started this game with us. Our very first podcast, we looked at our two commanders. So let's stroll on down to the Imperial corner. Let's ask Tim, how is Vader looking nowadays?
Sweet. He's looking so good. I think he's going to be coming back, much like the AT-ST, honestly. I know he's kind of had a lull, which makes sense, you know, with all these new things coming out. Everybody wants to try the new stuff. And me too. I was right there along with him. But the more I'm starting to see other things play out, the more I'm like, you know what would really fix this problem? A good old red lightsaber to the face. Yep. And I miss Vader. So many times I'm like, ugh. I wish I had Vader right now. I know he's expensive, but I could make it work and I could make him kill people right now and win the game. So I love it. Actually, throwing back to the last podcast when I mentioned playing the Vader palp list, it actually helped me remember how much I love playing Vader, of how much I love of just marching down the road or marching down the map and just going, you die, you die, you die. Ha ha. It's great. I think, again, it's going to take some tweaking. It's going to take some practice. You're going to have to figure out how does he fit in the new alignment of things. But once we find that fit, I think it has potential to be very scary.
Yeah. So you have to take saber throw. Do you put anger on there instead of force reflexes?
I've. It's interesting you say that. Well, no, not instead of force reflexes, because I want my Vader to live. No, as much as I love push, and Ryan, I know you said push is one of the best cards in the game, and I agree with you. I do.
I didn't say it was one of the best cards in the game. God. It is the best card in the game.
I knew you were going to freaking say that. And I agree, it is one of the best cards in the game. However, I think anger also could have a place on Vader, and I've seen it have a place on Vader. So it's a tough toss-up. You really got to look at your list, I suppose, and figure out what you're going to do, how you're going to play it. I could see it either way. But it's an interesting choice that we now have. We didn't have that before. Now we have to make it.
Right. Yeah. No, I think Vader's in a cool spot. I don't think he's domineering like he was when we were playing 500-point battles on a 3x3.
Right.
I don't think he's wrecking like he does if you just open up your starter box. But I think he's falling into an interesting place. I think guards help him out a little bit. I think the cheaper activations, now that people are running a lot more triple snipers, are going to help him out. And I think as activation count has come down since, you know, wave one, he'll find his way back into the metagame.
Yeah.
He fits a very different place than Palpatine, from Implacable to And Now You Die, how they kind of do the same thing. Like, I'm going to deal more damage for my own health, but Vader just has such a more a bigger power reserve of health of 8 compared to 5. The other thing that I think is going to bring Vader back is the thing that honestly has kept Luke from ever leaving, and that immune to Pierce keyword is getting more and more valuable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So many times as an Imperial player, I'm like, oh, I wish I was immune to this Pierce garbage. Vader is.
Yeah. I mean, with Chewie having Pierce, with snipers having Pierce, with Han having buckets of Pierce, with Leia and Luke and other Vaders, like, Pierce is starting to pick up everywhere, even to the point to where you're paying a premium to get a worse model on your Royal Guards just to be immune to some of the Pierce, not even all of it, just melee Pierce. I think him and Palpatine to that degree coming on board and online with immune to Pierce will push him back into the metagame a bit. And now that he's got people to Guardian to help out, since he doesn't have access to esteemed leader like the Rebels or Veers do, I think Vader and a set of guards and a bunch of troopers is a very strong list.
Yeah, it's going to be scary to see Vader coming down. And even if you get a hit through a Dash Shogun, through the red defense dice, he just gives it to the guards next to him.
Yep.
And he keeps coming.
Well, that's a take a look at the Imperial corner. Let's slink on down to the Rebel caves and see how Rebels are juggling their commanders. What's the place of Luke in the current commander options?
Well, Luke in the Rebel Cave is probably hanging upside down by a Wampa. But
Too soon.
Man, I'll tell you what. I know the internet hates on Vader, and we just told you he's awesome. The internet also tells you that Luke is awesome. I read a lot of posts. I listen to some other podcasts where people love Luke. And I still think Luke is a really strong, extremely fast control unit that the Rebels have access to. And there's not really another unit that fits his niche and his role, his place quite the way Luke does. Plus, he's the only piece the Rebels have that give them access to the best card in the game, Force Push. Son of Skywalker, about 50% of the time you play it, it will swing the game one way or another. It's not just sometimes a high impact card. It's always a high impact card. Sometimes you swing and miss, and it definitely swung the game because you put your Luke in a risky spot. But I find him to be so high risk and so high reward. He's a ton of fun to play, but for me personally, Han fits my playstyle a bit better. There are so many lists that you can take both, and I've had a lot of fun with both because it puts out a ton of damage, and you throw control to the wind, and you throw utility to the wind, and you just murder stuff. But I also think the thing that has pushed Luke to the edge of the table for me, to where he's not my high priority pick anymore, is I think Wookiees kind of take some of the same space he does. They have a high health pool. They throw a bunch of black dice. They don't have the Pierce, but they throw a bunch of black dice, tie things up in melee, and are extremely fast and mobile. While there isn't something that fits Han's role where he just is sharpshooter one, Pierce two, looks at things and they die. And Leia is just such a rock steady, stable commander with her dodge tokens and her utility and no time for sorrows that can just change up your game. I think for me, Luke has gotten pushed to the edge because of Wookiees, but he's still an incredibly strong unit, and he does things better than those Wookiees could ever dream of.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's coming from the Imperial side, looking at Luke. I've always hated Luke, and then he kind of went away a little while, and that was fine, so now I hate Han. And Luke, I don't think I hate as much, but we always forget how mobile he is. So really, guys, he's the anti-Boba that you crave. I hear all these people talking about, oh, Boba's great. And indeed, Boba can do some amazing things. But you run up, and Ryan can testify to this, and he just did. You run up and you son a Skywalker. Boom. Like you just killed Boba. And you might have
just possibly. A lot of times, yeah.
Yeah, like, not every time, but yeah, a lot of time. And that's it. You've just swung the game, and this is a whole different thing. So I think it's just a really good counter to that. And then, of course, just in general of being good. It seems like really we're having a return to Force users, both Vader and Luke, which is funny because I used to hate on them when they started. And that was mainly just because we got kind of pigeonholed into having to use them. But now that we have the freedom to choose and mix it up a little bit, I kind of like him in the right list, in the right time. And what about those just more generic kind of folks?
And of course, you know, this is what I'm going to take a look at. I've been looking at these generic commanders. I think the Imperial commanders are so expensive. Veers is cheap, but he also tends to blow up pretty often. And then I have to go from Veers at 80 points to Palpatine at 230 or Vader at 200. There's a huge swing where on the Rebel side, you don't have that swing. They're very closely aligned to each other. So to make points in a list, I've been eyeballing these generic commanders. I really like them, actually. I've looked at some. I've been kind of been playing with Tabletop Admiral. You get a backup for Veers if you want to, or is the only commander with my Boba as my lieutenant? Because let's just be honest, if you kill my only commander, I'm making Boba the new commander. on the Rebel side, you can field three sets of Wookiees, a generic commander, Rebel troopers with an extra body, and Chewbacca, and an AT-RT. It's like 11 activations of tons of health. It's hard to knock down. Now, yes, do you lose the Leia's ability? You absolutely do. These are pale imitations of them, but they're 50 points. And so I can put those points to use someplace else. I'm really digging them. I like them a lot.
Meh. I don't see a universe where I plan to take one. The access to command cards, like just taking Leia as a baseline for 40 extra points, you get her three incredible command cards, and literally everything that Rebel Commander does is doubled. Double the sharpshooter, double the dice, double the inspire, double the dodge tokens, almost double the health. For 40 points, yeah, sign me up. And then, you know, you put another couple points on top of that, another 30 points on top of that, and you've got Han. Like, the amount of work that those models bring over just a white and a black die with sharp one, pierce one. I don't even think they have pierce. Yeah, they don't even have pierce. Yeah, no, they're pretty garbage tier for the Rebels. I think the Imperial one's got a bit more of a place, but other than that, like, that generic commander card for me and my garbage pile is definitely under covert observation.
Yeah, see, I'm kind of more on the fence about them. I think the independent commanders are neat for 50 points. Like Ben was saying, we don't have a whole lot of options. It's Veers or, you know, something super expensive. What's funny enough is I think it's hilarious that they came out now, because I think they'll be pretty useful until the next release and we get Krennic, and then I'm not going to really use them anymore. So like, I think they're going to be neat for a hot second and then probs not. Now maybe Krennic and a generic as well, but again, I'll probably just be running Veers Krennic. However, I will say that the squad leaders that come with it, the squad leader officers, those are totally worth it. That's a different ball game.
Totally.
That's totally different. And especially as a snow player, like, I've, you know, you're seeing so many DLTs right now, rightfully so, because they're amazing. But I think that's going to help put snows back on the map, because they're not getting as suppressed, or they're still getting suppressed, right, but they can get it off and it's fine. You know, you don't have to put an officer on every squad, Ben. But you can put one here and there. You spend your points wisely, and I think it's going to make all the difference in the world. But that's, again, that's the squad leader ones.
Being able to pick up that double move, even though you have a single suppression, is amazing with flamethrowers. Yeah.
Yes.
It allows you to get there and get there on time. Because the key to fighting a snowtrooper is to put suppression on it.
Yep.
And the Inspire is fantastic.
And I could even see it on some stormtroopers as well, really. If, you know, if you're trying to get some double shots, or not double shots, excuse me, aim and shoots off, that's, I could see it.
Yeah. Or just that, I think just that Inspire ability on the upgrade, not the commander himself, but the officer upgrade, is worth its weight. Not giving them the extra action, but giving somebody else near them an extra action could be crucial.
Yeah.
But with us being the Stabcast, the most on-point, cutting-edge podcast, we've discovered a conspiracy theory. If you go send your browser to the Star Wars Legion product page on Fantasy Flight Games website and mine through the product numbers, our large premium bases are SWL-29. And Jyn Erso, the next unit slated for release, is SWL-31. We're missing a product number, boys.
Gasp.
I was really bored trying to find release dates, and I stumbled upon this. So, Tim, what is, in your humblest opinion, our missing product number?
Well, first off, this is big if true, but I think this is just my, as you said, humble opinion. I don't want to get people too excited, but I'm telling you, it's going to be nothing but Ugnaughts.
No.
It's going to be Ugnaughts. Hidden Crouching Tiger, Hidden Ugnaught. That's what it is. It's the name of it. They're going to come in. They're going to repair all your vehicles quicker than the robots do. And they're going to be armed with little shotguns. Calling it right now.
Ben, what's our missing product number?
I think it's Hondo Onaka. I'm telling you, it's an operator that we can use in multiple places. It's Hondo. It's Hondo. Hondo.
No, I think you're both incredibly wrong. I mean, we've got premium trooper bases. We've got premium large bases.
Oh, no.
Guys, it's time for the premium barricade pack. We're missing our premium barricade. They'll be magnetized. You'll be able to stack them up. They'll connect together. It'll be great. They'll be the most premium barricades you could ever find. Yes.
If you're just going to stack them, just make your barricades out of Legos.
But no, they need to be printed by FFG, and they'll be beautiful and gorgeous and very thematic.
So get some Legos and paint FFG on them.
Yeah.
What I would like to see is another priority supplies like expansion. I want more command cards. Absolutely. I want more battle cards.
We talked about this before the show, before we started recording. That's what we all really want it to be. I don't know if that's what it is. We have no idea. But there is a missing product number out there, so all you conspiracy theorists can go nuts. And as you go to send your brains to go do that, I want to thank you guys for stopping down, having your commute, your afternoon, your evening, your painting session, whenever it is that you listen to us. Thanks for stopping by. We're trying to get back on a more regular schedule. So far we're doing it, so we hope to keep it up. Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Ryan Slawoski, reminding you the power or bane of variance.
I'm Tim Hannon, and I'm sorry.
And I'm Ben Fowler, reminding you that a dodge and cover doesn't mean a thing if you just roll crits.
Jeez, all right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, all.
That's because you guys kept telling me I was too soft. I moved in too close.
I know.
I was making sweet love to the microphone.
And there's the blurb.
Probably.